This is the September 8th morning session of the Portland City Council. Under Portland City Code and State Law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference. City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the meeting. The meeting is available on our YouTube channel, eGovPDX, portlandoregon.gov/video. Public can provide written testimony. The Council Clerk can CC testimony, portlandoregon.gov. We're doing this because of COVID, trying to create safe spaces for everyone. Thanks for your patience. With that, we'll hear from legal counsel and rules of order and decorum.
Good morning. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the city council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist, and if you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that council meetings are recorded.
Thanks. Keelan, can you call the roll, please?
Hardesty?
Here.
Max?
Here.
Rubio? Ryan? Wheeler?
Here. First up, communication 651, please.
Request of Anna Kemper to address council regarding closure of Kelly Butte.
Hey, good morning, council members. My name is Anna Kemper. I currently live in Northeast Portland on land that belongs to the Multnomah and Clackamas bands of Chinook people. And I'm currently a board member of Portland Neighbors Welcome. And I'm here today on behalf of Portland Neighbors Welcome advocating for housing justice for the residents of Kelly Butte Park in Southeast. So in 2018, the city of Portland did a great thing and created a new zoning classification through the Manufactured Home Park Ordinance, protecting manufactured homes, much like land trusts. Unfortunately, that zoning classification has a loophole that has left the residents of Kelly Butte Park vulnerable. The current owner of the land is hoping to redevelop the area and price the current residents out of their homes, out of the homes that many of them have known for decades. So I was born and raised in Portland. I believe in safe, dense, walkable neighborhoods that citizens from all walks of life can enjoy. And I know that many of us share those same values. I've watched the rents rise and housing markets explode in recent years. A high cost of living is pricing Portlanders out of Portland. The current tenants at Kelly Butte are kicked out of their homes. And where will they go? Every single person deserves a safe place to lay their head at night. And these residents are facing a terrifying and uncertain future. So the good news is that the city of Portland can take action to protect these residents. So the city could cancel the permits put in by the developer. They could buy the parks outright. They could push the owner of the land to sell via eminent domain, or they could even buy new land for the current residents to live on. Portland Neighbors Welcome believes the city must step in the case of Kelly Butte Park and protect these vulnerable residents. Portland Neighbors Welcome is a pro-density and pro-tenant group, and we believe strongly that preventing displacement from stable and affordable homes is an incredibly important part of our work. Manufactured homes provide housing for the elderly, for families, and for many people with disabilities. In January 2021, City Council identified housing affordability and houselessness as one of its top 3 priorities. And we'd love to see the city walk the talk to stand up to developers and protect our neighbors who are living in affordable housing. Thank you all.
Thanks, Anna. Next up, 652, next individual.
Request of Sandra Lavingier to address council regarding closure of Kelly Butte.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I'm new at this Zoom stuff.
Nope, you sound great. Loud and clear.
Okay, my name is Sandra Lovinger. I'm a resident of Kelly Butte Manufactured Home Park. I've lived here for 12 years since spending my entire savings on my home in 2009. I was a bartender for 30 years. I slowed down considerably after I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 1994. Bartending doesn't provide a retirement plan, but I put money away in my savings regularly, so I had something to live on when it was time to retire. Buying my home was my plan to provide some stability and secure my future. In 2010, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's disease, which required multiple surgeries, extensive surgeries, and plasmapheresis 3 times a week. I am plagued with chronic fatigue, headaches. I require Botox treatments every 3 months. I have nerve damage in my brain from the MS lesions that cause my speech to slur at times, if you haven't noticed. I'm severely immunocompromised and can't leave my home before getting the vaccination. And then even after I got vaccinated, I got corona and pneumonia. I'm recovering from that now. At this time, I can no longer work. I live off my disability and make money collecting bottles and cans to help support myself. I spend my days caring for my grandchildren as I'm able. Since receiving the notice of the park closure, I've been an absolute wreck. I don't know what I'm going to do if the city doesn't do something to help us save our homes. Right now, I own my home outright. I pay $700 in space rent, and that's a lot less than I'd pay renting an apartment, even if it was affordable housing. And I can't qualify to rent anywhere anyway because of my income. Because I can't afford to move it, and it's no longer of any value because it has to be moved, I will have to walk away from my home empty-handed. Right now, my plan is to sleep in my car if I lose my house because I have nowhere to go. I assumed my house was going to be my forever home, but no matter, it will be my last home. Kelly Butte Park is a true community. We know all our neighbors and we help each other out. If I lose my home, I will be homeless. I have nowhere to go. I've worked all my life, finally finding a place where I felt safe and content. I've paid my bills and my taxes. I just to have it all ripped out from underneath me. We need help. Please buy our park from the developer and save our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. And I know you're not used to doing this and testifying remotely. I really appreciate you making the effort to be here and be heard and heard well. Thank you. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and I'm recovering from COVID and pneumonia.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry to hear that. Hope you get better soon. Take good care of yourself.
I think I'm on the mend.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. And based on that, I'm doubly appreciative that you made the effort to be here today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Keela, next individual, item 653, please.
Request of Margot Black to address council regarding closure of Kelly Butte.
Good morning.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Margot Black. I'm a tenant organizer and advocate. I've been organizing with the residents of Kelly Butte Manufactured Home Park since early this year regarding the imminent closure and redevelopment of their park. We are asking the city to take urgent and bold action to save this park and community. I know that Commissioner Ryan isn't here today, but we decided to speak in front of you anyway because the responsibility of anti-displacement shouldn't be siloed with the commissioner that the mayor happens to bestow with the Bureau. These residents are your tax-paying constituents, and the hard work of preventing and mitigating displacement in this city is the collective responsibility of all of our commissioners. Indeed, it is the responsibility of all of you to uphold Policy 5.37 of the city's comprehensive plan, which directs the city to encourage preservation of mobile home parks as a low to moderate income housing option, evaluate plans and investments for potential redevelopment pressures on existing mobile home parks and impacts on park residents, and protect this low to moderate income housing option, facilitate replacement and alteration of manufactured homes within an existing mobile home park. To remind you, the residents of Kelly Butte are primarily senior citizens and include people of color, retirees, families, union workers, people with disabilities, and people with severe health issues. They are also homeowners for whom their modest but well cared for and now worthless home was their only asset. In the midst of the pandemic, they received notice that the new owner of their park, developer Adam Hosley, is closing the 11-unit park in order to redevelop it into townhomes selling for over $400,000, a price way out of reach for these low-income Portlanders. This park should have been protected from redevelopment by the bold and courageous action taken by City Council in August 2018 when, in recognition that manufactured homes are a crucial source of affordable housing for low-income Portlanders, it created new zoning for all of Portland's manufactured home parks with the MHP zoning ordinance. Kelly Butte was technically protected by this ordinance in that it was rezoned, but through an unfortunate loophole in city law, Adam Hosley, who didn't even own the land yet, was able to submit building permits prior to the passage of the ordinance, grandfathering him into the old zoning and allowing him to redevelop the park. These permits are still pending and have not been and have been extended several times and even granted a generous COVID extension despite the zoning not conforming. The state requires that Hosley pay homeowners $8,000 in relocation, but even if there were a single spot in the metro area that had space for any of these homes, which there isn't, the one resident who was able to move their home from the park has tallied their expenses at $68,000. The remaining residents can't afford to move their homes and they don't want to. They want to stay in their community. Being forced out through no fault of their own and at huge personal expense isn't an outcome we should be willing to tolerate in Portland after the landmark protections we have passed to address such issues and protect people exactly like those in Kelly Butte. This is, I promise I'm almost done, but I'm gonna go about 20 seconds over. This is the same sad state of affairs for another park, Strawberry Acres, a 35-unit senior community that Hosley does not yet own and has not yet closed, but his permits are still active. Is the city prepared for what happens when a 35-unit park of senior homeowners ravaged by COVID are forced out of their homes when he closes that park after he's done redeveloping this one? Can we stop the development? Do we have a plan to stop the bleeding if we can't? This is community displacement happening real time that the city knew about in 2018. We need a strategy in place to prevent or mitigate it. We need to stop talking about anti-displacement and start taking real actions that realize it. Please move heaven and earth to buy this park or otherwise preserve it. The city has power. It's time to use it.
Thank you. Next up is 654, please. Next individual.
Request of Alan Brown to address council regarding closure of Kelly Butte.
Good morning.
It doesn't look like Alan has joined us.
Okay. Next individual, then, item 655.
Request of Lucy Brissac to address council regarding closure of Kelly Butte.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep. You sound good, Lucy.
Okay. Perfect. My name is Lucy Brissac. My husband's name is Joe. We live at Kelly Butte Manufactured Park as a family with our 8-year-old daughter, Maya. We spent our entire life savings for IVF to have our daughter. And then when she was about 4 years old, we had saved up about $20,000 and we started looking at homes, but we were priced out of traditional homes. So we decided to start looking at manufactured home parks because we wanted to stay in Portland. Frankly, our home was the first one we saw, and we made the mistake of falling in love with it. And we were proud to be able to provide stability in housing and home ownership for our daughter. Unfortunately, less than 3 months after moving in, our hope for a stable and long-lasting home for our family was ripped out from under us with no warning. And it turned what should have been one of the most joyous experiences for us into a never-ending nightmare that's gone on for 3 years now. We found out our community was up for sale. We asked before we ever bought if the owner was thinking about selling, and he told us no. 6 months before we bought is when the permits were taken out on the park to redevelop, and no one said anything to us. No one is required to tell us, unfortunately. We didn't find out until the owner notified us that he was planning to sell. As a group, we put in a fair market offer to buy the park because we were that committed to staying. A few months later, after hearing nothing back, we were sent notice that the park was sold. A few months after that, we were sent a notice by the new owner telling us that we had a year to get out. That year is up in about 47 days. We're family. We're not just neighbors. We've taken care of each other like family during the last year and a half, during COVID, wildfires, civil unrest. After my husband and I ran out of money for childcare because of COVID, our neighbors watched our daughter, not wanting anything else but just to help. We can't afford to move our homes. We don't want to leave. We want to stay in our community where we can continue to take care of each other. Now, my ask of the city and each of you individually, we don't want to be displaced. We don't want to be homeless. But that's what's going to happen if we aren't able to keep our homes. We want the city to come up with the funding so that we can stay in our homes and allow us to buy the park from the developer. Without your help, many of my neighbors who are seniors and medically fragile have nowhere to go except their cars. I'm begging you, please do what no one else has been willing or able to do and help us stay in our homes. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you, Lucy, and thanks to all of you. I want to just make a brief comment. I try not to comment too much during public testimony because this is your space, not mine. But this is exactly what we were afraid was going to happen. When we passed this ordinance, I think it was about 4 years ago now, we took, at the time, a fairly extraordinary step to protect all of the manufactured home sites in the city limits. And we did it precisely for this reason. We were concerned that those sites would be sold off and they would no longer be a viable source of affordable housing, and they are. In fact, an outstanding source of affordable housing. And that's why we sought to protect them. But we also knew at the time, and it was stated on the record, that this particular park was exempt from those new regulations because it already had the permit in place. And that was the hard reality of it then. We as city commissioners are required to uphold the law. That is the law per city code. And we stated quite clearly on the record at that time that there was this exemption to that city code as a result of the permit already being in place. I believe there was, and I could be misspeaking here, but I believe there was an attempt on the part of the Housing Bureau to reach out to the owner of that park at some point to see about the possibility of securing it using affordable housing dollars. As a potential source of funding for that. I recall a conversation to that effect, but I can't swear by it. I don't know what the options are at this particular junction, either from a permitting perspective or from the Housing Bureau perspective. The commissioner in charge is Commissioner Ryan, who is not here today. But I will personally commit to sharing this information with Commissioner Ryan and make sure that he is aware of it. And it's possible, I can't see quickly enough, that maybe even Shannon Callahan is on. I don't actually see her today, but the housing director, I'll make sure that they are aware of the urgency of this matter. I don't know if there are any last minute plays to be had here, but I want you to know I'm compelled by your testimony. I was supportive of protecting this site 4 years ago, and I'm supportive of it today. And I appreciate your coming forward. Keelan, does that complete communications?
Yes, it does.
Consent agenda, have any items been pulled off of the consent agenda?
We've had requests for two items, 656 and 660.
And 660, please call the roll on the remainder of the consent agenda.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Maps?
Aye.
Rubio?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The consent agenda is approved. To the regular agenda, item 663, please.
Proclaim September 10 through 19, 2021 to be Welcoming Week.
Colleagues, I am honored to introduce this Welcome Week proclamation as our city celebrates Portland's immigrant refugee communities. This, as you know, is a week-long event. It takes place from September 10th through the 19th. It will offer lectures, performances, community discussions, and much, much more. This year's theme is Belonging Begins With Us. The message is intended to foster a more welcoming nation and world where everyone, regardless of their background, can belong. The city's values of anti-racism, equity, collaboration, communication, fiscal responsibility, and transparency are all interwoven into this week-long celebration. As a sanctuary city, Portland is a leader in our nation, as we are on the forefront of welcoming immigrants and refugees into our community. We believe that delving into issues that are of global and national consequence do, in fact, have important implications for our constituents right here in the city of Portland. And that's why we support these important broad values. I will now pass this on to Commissioner Hardesty to introduce our guest. Good morning, Commissioner Hardesty.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, colleagues and guests. Thank you so much for joining us for the Welcoming Week Activities Proclamation. I do not have a list of guests, so I suspect the Office of Community and Civic Life has staff here that will present, that will give us our speakers for today. Before I turn it over to Civic Life, let me just say that I look forward to this week when we can celebrate a variety of different cultures that have made Portland their home. And it's really important for us as elected leaders, as a city, to be really clear that we welcome and support and appreciate all the culture that comes with having immigrants and refugees in our community. We want our community to embrace the new Afghanistan refugees that are coming in. I know we have a few that have already arrived. And let me just say that as a country, we must do better in how we actually integrate immigrants into our community. It's not sufficient to give people 6 months of support and then kick them out to the curb and have them fend for themselves. Today, we are highlighting our desire to actually foster a welcoming and inclusive and equitable city. And so I will turn it over to the Office of Civic and Community Life. It looks like, I'm sorry, I can barely see my sign here. Please introduce yourself and take it away.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Maria Klimenko. I'm the Immigrant and Refugee Program Coordinator at the Office of Community and Civic Life. We're so grateful for the introduction of this proclamation. And I would like to introduce one of our newest members of the New Portlanders Policy Commission, Masara Awas, who will be sharing what this proclamation means to immigrant and refugee communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. Welcoming Week to us as refugees and immigrants means celebrating unity, diversity, belonging, and safety. I grew up in an Iraqi family in Iraq, where I learned the values of welcoming people, generosity, accepting others, and opening our arms, hearts, and homes to others when they are in need for our help. Coming to Portland and becoming a part of the New Portlander Policy Commission and celebrating Welcoming Week means it makes me feel at home and makes me feel safe to share piece of my home with others in the community. Some refugee and immigrant populations, especially in the last few years, have been battling with the concept of stability and certainty and a sense of not belonging in the community they're living in due to political and social factors. So this welcoming week comes at a critical time to emphasize these feelings and work on cultivating relationships, connections, and partnerships with our communities in Portland, where we are all united. We need to see more commitment to help refugees and immigrants in living a life full of dignity and respect. These are the very reasons we have sought to come to the United States. We have to see partnerships raising the voices of unheard immigrants and refugees, where refugees and immigrants have a say in how they're treated and what services are being provided for them, where refugees and immigrants, grassroots organizations are invited to the table, involved in the research and data collection process. And Portlanders and the city of Portland are intentional about including refugees and immigrants in making changes to policies and institutional structures. Refugees and immigrants being involved means we are moving to more culturally appropriate practices where people don't feel that they are left behind or not heard. So we invite you to our kickoff event on September 10th at 10 p.m., as well as the other events as well. Thank you.
I'm sorry, did you mean 10 p.m.?
I meant 10 p.m. Sorry.
A.m.?
10 p.m., I think, Marielle.
Opening, it's starting at 10 p.m.
The opening event is from 6 to 8 p.m. this Friday at Gateway Park. Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to thank you all, to thank the partners who have supported Welcoming Week and made it possible. And thanks to Mayor Wheeler and the City Council, John Harvesty, for your continuous support.
Thanks, Ms. Har. Appreciate it very, very much. Colleagues, before I read the proclamation, any comments? Commissioner Mapps, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Colleagues, I'm delighted to join you in declaring September 10th through the 19th to be Welcoming Week. Let me get my thoughts together for a second. Welcoming Week is a week-long celebration of Portland's immigrant and refugee communities. Welcoming Week is also a reminder that except for Native Americans, we are all immigrants to this land that we love. And Welcoming Week is also a challenge to Portlanders to do what we can to help our city become a welcoming place for new Portlanders. This year, Welcoming Week resonates deeply. Today, more than 82 million people around the globe are refugees, adrift looking for a place to call home. They come from places like Syria, Venezuela, South Sudan, Myanmar, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Somalia, and of course, Afghanistan. Now I'd like to share my own Oregon immigration story. Back in World War II, my grandfather served in the Army. On occasion, he would come up to Portland for some rest and recreation. In the 1940s, no restaurants in Portland would serve my grandfather, even when he was in uniform, except for Chinese restaurants. 80 years later, that simple act of hospitality by members of Portland's Chinese community is still remembered by my family. And that is one of the reasons why today I am a Portlander. And that is also one of the reasons why today I serve on the city council. Now, if there's a moral to the story, I think it is this: welcoming communities are resilient, dynamic, and just. And that's why I urge every Portlander to join me in celebrating and participating in Welcoming. This year's celebrations include many in-person and virtual events, including opening ceremonies at Gateway Park on September 10th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. On September 16th from 6 to 7:30, there will be a virtual resource fair for immigrant-owned businesses. And on September 17th at 5 p.m., there will be an immigrant and refugee awareness walk at Gateway Park. I encourage every Portlander to participate in those events, and I urge every Portlander to join me in making Portland a community that welcomes all. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Mapps. Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner Hardesty, Masara, and Maria, and the new Portland Policy Commission for bringing this important proclamation forward. I think folks have heard me talk. I'm the daughter and granddaughter of immigrants, and so this proclamation is really personal for me. Our immigrant and refugee communities contribute so much to our city's economy, our leadership, our culture, and our vibrancies in more ways that we can name. And we all belong here. So this week and every week, we owe it to each other to continue to be a city that supports everyone who chooses to live here. So thanks for this important work, and I stand committed to supporting it.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. So before I read the proclamation on behalf of the council, I want to thank Masara for joining us today. I also want to thank the new Portlanders Policy Commission, the Office of Community and Civic Life, and the Office of Equity and Human Rights for helping to draft this proclamation. Thank you for your excellent work. Finally, I want to thank Welcoming America, Prosper Portland, Portland Parks and Recreation, and the dozens of community leaders, activists, artists, performers, and volunteers who will be participating all week long. Here is the proclamation. Whereas the City of Portland recognizes immigrants and refugees and their contributions to a culturally vibrant, prosperous, and multicultural community. And whereas, regardless of where we are born or how we identify, we are Portlanders and our lives are interdependent. By fostering a welcoming environment for all, regardless of immigration status, race, ethnicity, place of origin, English language proficiency, religion, income, gender, sexual orientation, differing abilities, age, and other factors, we enhance Portland's health, economic prosperity, and the well-being for both current and future generations. And whereas, on June 17th, 2020, all City of Portland commissioners voted to approve a resolution that created a strict no-tolerance policy for racism, discrimination, and bias in the workplace, and it continues to encourage all city employees and services to operate with the values of anti-racism, equity, collaboration, communication, fiscal responsibility, and transparency. And whereas Portland's spirit of unity, safety, and belonging begins with us, and we must continue to act like a sanctuary city where everyone feels valued and safe. And whereas all Portlanders and Portland institutions must commit to helping immigrant and refugee communities beyond this proclamation and make Portland a welcoming place to all. And whereas, for the first time ever, Portland has joined Welcoming America, a national nonprofit and a network of local governments and nonprofits around the nation and world to pledge to become a welcoming place for new and long-term residents alike. And now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim the period between September 10th, 2021 and September 19th, 2021 as Welcoming Week in Portland, and do further declare that the City of Portland be a community that welcomes all and encourage all residents to observe this week. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Masara. Thank you, Mariah. The next item is an emergency ordinance on the regular agenda, item 664, please, Keelan.
Authorize a letter of agreement between the city, Local Laborers 483, and District Council of Trade Unions to allow employees in the Access to Work program to move from maintenance worker assistant and office support specialist assistant classifications directly to the maintenance worker and office support specialist one classifications.
I'm sorry. Did you say, did I miss something?
No, I just finished reading the title.
Oh, geez, I couldn't hear that at all. I must have been, can you guys hear me? Did you hear my introduction so far? Okay, good. I'm sorry, Keelan, apparently my internet connection's lousy here. So these employees are hired on an assistant capacity and they work with a bureau and a job coach to perform their duties successfully. This letter of agreement will create a pathway for employees who've successfully completed the steps of the assistant classification to progress into the traditional job classification without requiring employees to reapply and be placed on an eligibility list. So we have Labor Relations Coordinator Jamal Anthony here to present the ordinance. Welcome and good morning, Jamal, and I hope your internet connection is better than mine.
Good morning, Council. Mayor, I hope you can hear me. We won't know till I'm done, but all right. All is well. I'll be brief. Currently, in 2019, we created the Access to Work program, which creates assistant positions for employees, assistant maintenance worker assistant, as well as office support specialist assistant roles. And those positions are filled by employees that require a recommendation from a voc rehab specialist. So those employees work with coaching and the voc rehab specialist. However, what we don't have is a mechanism for those employees once they've moved all the way through the assistant capacity to graduate into the role, because the two contracts that they're in prohibit that. So what this letter of agreement does, we work collaboratively with both of the impacted unions, Local Laborers 43 and the DCTU. These employees with management approval, after they've moved through the assistant capacity, can move directly into the traditional version of the role. BES, senior management and BES would like me to highlight that they've enjoyed this program immensely and currently have an employee that is at the end of the assistant role that seeks to become the traditional version of the job that will be impacted immediately by this ordinance. I can field questions, but that's really all I have otherwise.
Colleagues, any questions for Jamal? And if not, Keelan, do we have public testimony on this item?
Yes, I'm sorry. We do have one person signed up, Joshua Guerra.
Excellent. Joshua, if you could state your name for the record, 3 minutes, please.
Good morning. I'm sorry, I think I have the wrong agenda item. I was trying to comment on the declaration that the City Council was going to make regarding the Texas restrictions on the use of city funds.
I appreciate that we've put that off.
Okay. I'll check back in later. No comment.
Awesome. There. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on item 664? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Maps?
Aye.
Rubio?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. On the consent agenda 656, please.
Amend intergovernmental agreement between Office of Management and Finance, Office of Equity and Human Rights, and Prosper Portland for continued administration of the Community Opportunities and Enhancements Program.
And was this pulled by a commissioner or by a resident?
That was pulled by me, Commissioner.
Oh, great.
Commissioner Hardesty pulled it.
Awesome. Okay, so maybe what we could do is would you like a presentation, Commissioner Hardesty, from staff, or just answer some specific questions?
Thank you, Mayor, for that question. I actually just have a couple of very specific questions that I wanted to ask about this.
Okay, let me find out who's online here to answer those questions. I see Kathleen Brennis Marua is here. I see Kathleen, are you here to answer this issue?
Good morning, Mayor
and commissioners. I am here along with Biko Taylor, Chief Procurement Officer, Judith Mary with the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and also Morgan Masterman with Prosper Portland.
Thank you, Mayor. It may be a Prosper Portland question. Honestly, you know, this is one of those programs that was attempting to diversify contracting opportunities and to invest in those small minority women-owned firms so that they would be prepared for future contracts. I understand there will be a full report of the success of this, a report about what's happened since we authorized Prosper to be the lead. Can you tell me a bit about what I can expect and what the timeline is for us to get information about whether or not this actually works?
Sure. Hi, Mayor Wheeler. Good morning, and commissioners. Commissioner Hersey, thank you for that question. We do have some general output information, which is really more specifically around who the participants were, who were served through the program over the last year. We are working with Office of Management and Finance, Kathleen and Judith, to prepare a report that we'll be providing in February of 2022. Which will include more of the kind of hard outcomes that I think maybe you're looking for. And those would include things like more anecdotal outcomes around specifically for the business portion of the funding, whether or not business owners feel that they've increased their knowledge around their business operations, whether they feel that they're more confident in submitting bids, whether they were able to become COVID certified. But we also recognize that there's a lot of challenges with the COVID certification process. And so that's.
And so are you still requiring folks to be COVID certified? Because we know that doesn't work.
to receive services through the program, they do not need to be COVID certified. We are offering services and prioritizing firms who are owned by people of color as well as owned by women. We've had some great success in that. Out of the 74 participants who received business technical assistance last year, 92% identified as people of color. And I have breakdowns of those demographics that we can share to everybody after this report. Kathleen has that detail that we can share. Similar statistics on the workforce development side, which are specifically working with providing career coaching, as well as access to the pre-apprenticeship programming and helping place people who have completed the pre-apprenticeship programming into apprenticeship and placement into jobs. So we have breakdowns of that information as well.
Thank you very much. Yes, I'd be very interested in getting as much information ahead of time as possible, because I actually like to read that stuff. Thank you. And let me, since I'm talking, welcome our new procurement director, Biko Taylor. What a pleasure to have you here. I from what I've read, you were our top candidate, and we have a lot riding on your success. I look forward to getting to know you and helping you be successful. I'm sure your team told you I'm a hard critic, but only if you're not doing what you say you're doing. Welcome to the City of Portland, Biko.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for the warm welcome. Mayor Wheeler, commissioners, I'm looking forward to working with you all.
As we are with you. And thank you so much, Morgan. That answers all my questions, Mayor. I'm happy to vote now.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. And Biko, I want to extend my gratitude. We're very, very fortunate that somebody of your caliber was willing to step into this role. I agree with Commissioner Hardesty. It's a tough role. She makes it even tougher, no question about it. But this is an area that's really important to all of us. And you've heard the whole story, chapter and verse, and we're just really grateful that you're here and that you're rising to the challenge. And we will support you. We'll work with you to navigate through some really tough issues together. And so I want you to know that we're all here cheering for you and wishing your greatest success in the years ahead. Keelan, thank you, sir. Keelan, do we have any testimony on this item? I doubt we do.
Yeah, no one signed up for this one.
Okay, very good. Please call the roll. It's an emergency ordinance.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Maps?
I'd like to join my colleagues in welcoming BECO to Portland. We're excited to partner with you to make Portland a better city to live in. I also vote aye.
Rubio?
I also want to welcome BECO to Portland, to the city of Portland. Look forward to working with you. Happy to vote aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thank you all. Next item also pulled from the consent agenda, item 660. I believe this was pulled by a resident. Please read 660, an emergency ordinance.
Pay settlement of Michelle Fawcett bodily injury lawsuit for the sum of $50,000 involving the Portland Police Bureau.
Colleagues, this ordinance resolves a bodily injury lawsuit filed against the city in August of 2019. Senior Deputy City Attorney Rod Yamachika and Senior Claims Analyst Rose Radich are here to present the ordinance. Welcome, Rob and Rose.
Thank you, Mayor. Sorry, Rose.
I was just going to say, as the mayor said, I'm the senior claims analyst with risk management assigned to this lawsuit. I was going to introduce Rob to give a brief overview of the case. Thanks.
Thank you, Rose. Mayor, good morning. Commissioners, good morning. So this case stems from a protest that took place on August 4th, 2018 at Tom McCall Waterfront Park, where members of Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys held a rally and drew a large number of counter-protesters. Ms. Fawcett participated in the protest and alleged that PPB officers shot her with an aerial distraction device, which resulted in some disfigurement to her left forearm. Ms. Fawcett sought medical care and was diagnosed with a third-degree chemical burn and soft tissue damage. There was some dispute in the case as to what type of munition actually struck Ms. Fawcett, whether it was a 40-millimeter impact round or if it was an ADD, as was alleged in the complaint. Based on my experience with these cases, it appeared to be more consistent with a friction burn from a 40-millimeter sponge round. Trial was set for later this month, but before the trial, obviously, we had to do several depositions, which were scheduled to take place, which would have included taking the deposition of Ms. Fawcett and approximately 10 PPB members. And so in order to avoid the costs of that discovery, as well as additional costs for trial, as well as to avoid the risk for a potentially adverse jury verdict, it's the city attorney's office and risks recommendation that the city settle this case. I'm happy to answer any questions that any of you might have or respond to any public testimony on this case. Thank you.
Rob, why don't we hear the public testimony and then have you come back, and to the degree that you can respond, that would be great. I realize this is coming as a settlement, meaning the two parties have agreed that this is the appropriate resolution, but I'd like to hear the public testimony and then maybe hear your thoughts after. Thanks, Rob. Keelan, how many people do we have signed up for this item?
We have three people on the call.
Very good. 3 minutes each, please name for the record. And Keelan will call you in the order in which you're signed up.
First up, we have Allison Cole.
Good morning. Sorry, it always takes just a moment to become visible and hearable. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear, Allison.
Thank you so much. For the record, my name is Allison Cole. I live in Southeast Portland. And in the early parts of this year, I met with each of your offices, commissioners and Mayor Wheeler, about the use of crowd control weapons in our city. And I was coming to you with a large group of people that were very concerned about this issue, just from a public safety and a public health perspective. I sent you each a large packet of research, which I'm sure you all had time to read. But basically, this is a large volume of academic research on crowd control weapons, but also on crowd control training for law enforcement agencies all across the United States. And what these studies found over and over and over again was that both the use of the weapons and the training have an adverse impact on public safety and also on the safety of law enforcement officers themselves. What they found was that the more an agency invests in purchasing these types of tools, the more likely that agency is to kill civilians while on duty, and not necessarily in crowd control events, just ultimately what it does is it weaponizes and militarizes the police force against civilians. So I know that the city passed a inventory request and purchase ordinance last year that basically puts it in the power of city council to purchase more crowd control weapons for PPB, but I just don't think that that ordinance goes far enough. And I would like to find out from the council if there's an appetite in City Hall to really take a more humanitarian stance on crowd control weapons and ban them from use in the city. And this would fall in line with the recommendations from PSEP, from the crowd control committee, sorry, the Citizen Review Committee, their crowd control work group. And also, you know, the DOJ has signaled that they would work with the city of Portland to limit the use of these weapons. It just has to be done in conversation with them. I know that there was an attempt to ban tear gas last year that failed, but I don't think that city council should give up. There's no research that shows that these tools are useful in crowd control situations. They only put people in danger. I really sympathize with Michelle's case in this. It's not unique and she's not alone. Every Portlander should be safe around PPB. It's plain and simple. So yeah, if there's opportunity, I would love to hear, pardon me, from the council, what's possible. Thank you.
Thanks. And Allison, I just want to jump in here for just a minute. Thank you for your testimony and thanks for reaching out, meeting with our various offices. There's a lot of confusion about what is and what is not allowed currently. The ban on the use of CS gas that I put into effect, it was now well over a year ago, maybe it's even been a year and a half. And it is my understanding that PPP has not used any of the CS gas at all since that time. I could be mistaken, but I don't think I am. I believe there have literally been zero deployments by PPP. As you know, other law enforcement agencies are not under those same restrictions, not the state police, which reports to the governor, not the county sheriff's deputies that report to the county sheriff. But that has been PPB's stance. Since that time, the legislature has also taken this issue up. They passed House Bill, I think it was 2928. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think it was 2928. It was signed into law by the governor. And there's a discussion taking place right now between law enforcement statewide and the state attorney general, Ellen Rosenblum, in terms of what that actually means. And the current interpretation, and this may not hold, just to be clear, but the current sort of prevailing interpretation, just based on what we believe to be the case, is that all non-lethal munitions are effectively banned. And that, by the way, has implications for how the police respond. And I know that there was a lot of criticism for the tactical decisions that were made in the most recent battle between the Antifa anarchist folks on one side and the Proud Boys on the other. But it was their understanding that at that time, the tools that were available to them if they intervened were their fists, their clubs, or their guns. And that clearly is not a good scenario for anyone, not for the people who are engaged and not for the police and the safety of our men and women who are our officers. So we are seeking that interpretation from the state attorney general. Once we have that interpretation, that could then be the beginning of the discussion point about where we are. Because at the moment, there's a lot of confusion about what the implications of that law are for crowd control. You're also right that we're in conversations with the DOJ. In fact, right after this meeting, I'm going to spend the rest of the day with the DOJ attorneys talking through what their expectations are with regard to the settlement agreement. I think, Commissioner Mapps, you're joining me today, if I remember that correctly, if I have my rotation correct. So these are very active discussions. I just want you to have that context. It's probably more than you wanted to hear, sorry, but I thought I should err on the side of full disclosure.
Thank you. I appreciate that overview. And I'm happy to hear that there's maybe a more strict interpretation of 2928 that came out of the House, or that came out of the late state legislature. When I read the bill, the final bill myself, it didn't seem so comprehensive in terms of a total ban. So it will be interesting to see how that is interpreted. Thank you.
Yeah, and I should also just, did I just knock myself off? Oh, there we are. Poked the wrong button, sorry. Just to be clear, we are not the client to the Attorney General. The state police are the client. So it's not a conversation between us and Ellen Rosenblum. It's between her client and them, but we believe that will have implications for all of us. Too much information, probably. Next individual, please, Keelan.
Next up, we have Hyung Nam.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Hi. Today I'm speaking, I'm Hyung Nam. Today I'm speaking as a friend of Michelle's and a resident of Portland since 1987, who's been active in the city since then. And I want to speak about the not only how I've witnessed this trauma on Michelle ongoing for months, but also the collective effect of seeing this kind of incident over and over again. And ultimately, the reality that with risk management, it's ultimately up to the leaders in the city, especially the commissioner of the police, to respond to repeated incidents like this and make sure that we avoid this kind of harm to the public. And the broader context of this is that multiple people were injured on the same day, including Aaron Anthony Cantu, who suffered a traumatic brain injury with a flashbang shot through his helmet from the back. And these incidents have been increasing for many years, way before last summer, and especially under Mayor Wheeler. The use of these crowd control munitions, chemical agents, and so forth. I've never seen such indiscriminate and dangerous use of these weapons. And we know from repeatedly that this has been a problem. There was a report that came out from the IPR in May 2018 from a June 4th, 2017 incident where the police kettled the public, including journalists. They allowed the militia to aid arrests of leftist protesters while they're protecting far-right protesters. And that there were recommendations that were made about changing crowd control practices, and none of that was done. And in fact, things got even worse. And what we found last summer was that the temporary or the detached unit of the 50 rapid response team were made permanent full-time, driving up the abuse of overtime even after an audit was done, so that some cops made over $200,000, making more than their regular salary in just overtime. And ultimately, all of this was at an extreme danger to the public. And so when we see this kind of thing happening over and over again, we have to ask, what are our city leaders and ultimately the commissioner of the police doing to respond to this, to be to make sure that the public is safe and that we don't keep seeing this happening? And right now there's talk about increasing funding for the police. And we have to see that this is ultimately a drain, not only a drain on our public resources, but ultimately a threat to public safety. Thank you.
Thank you, Young. Appreciate your being here. I don't agree with you on all points, but I always do appreciate your comments, and you always give us a lot to think about. I appreciate you being here today. Next individual, please, Keelan.
Next up, we have Emery Mort.
Welcome, Emery.
Okay, getting unmuted here. Good morning, everybody. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you and see you.
Good morning, Council. My name is Emery Mort. I'm a resident of Portland. I wanted to help ground us in the events of the day in question here. It was mid-2018. This was 1.5 years into Trump's term, and Vancouver-based MAGA vigilante group came to try a new tactic of assembling in the city, being openly armed along the waterfront. So an anti-racist counter-demonstration was organized. The city, as often does, encouraged the public not to come, to stay inside, and let the vigilante mob of armed men do whatever it wishes. For its part, the city mobilized hundreds of police officers for this event. So Portlanders, mostly everyday people dressed in everyday clothes, met near the federal building and marched down to meet the right-wingers at Salmon Springs. There, our march was met by lines of police holding us in the street. And I remember being surprised because within a couple minutes of us being there, the police LRAD came on and said, "We were an unlawful assembly and we all need to disperse." So everyone stood together, this went on for a few minutes, and then the police stopped doing that. No one left. So around this time, it was later revealed that police had found far right riflemen acting as basically de facto snipers on top of a parking structure overlooking our group. So police kept this secret from the public, and the police at the time gently asked the men to return their weapons to their vehicles, and there were no citations or anything. So despite that, the police did nothing to shut down the right-wing group that was there that day, despite this kind of violence and menacing that one would think would not be part of public assemblage. So about 2 hours later, this is when the event happened, the violence happened. We were all a few blocks south. The right-wingers had marched there, and the anti-fascist assembly had moved 800 people or so to block the mob, the same people who would be storming the capitals a few years later. So the police were standing in the middle. There were 800 people in a narrow street between two skyscrapers and 250 armed right-wingers across the street. Nothing was happening. Suddenly, three policemen, I saw them step up with guns in front of the center, face the anti-fascists, in front of the right-wingers, raise their guns. And I said to my friend, "Oh my God, what is going to happen?" They fired and huge booms exploded above our heads and eventually into the crowd. The right-wingers were cheering and bam, boom, boom, grenades going off in the middle of the city. And the heavy line of police then launched a baton attack into the line of local protesters. They beat and exploded the crowd back a block, then another block. Reports said they exhausted the entire bureau's supply of grenades that day. They then turned right and north and beat journalists, women, children, people with disabilities back another block, two, three more blocks. And then they just left. And many of us just reassembled peacefully back at the waterfront. So the attack was kind of pointless, or was it? Michelle was struck in the attack. And I had never met Michelle at that point. We later started working together and we're very close now. But I probably spent 2 to 3 hours per week in meetings with Michelle for years. And she never once mentioned to me that this happened to her, that these men pointed the grenade launcher or whatever the city wants to say, they pointed at her into the crowd and they showed her what happens if women think they can oppose the far right in Portland. So it's terrifying when police coordinate with these regional squads to assault residents of a city. But that's a key underlying reality of how Portland was built. And that's apparently how Wheeler and many men in the city intend to keep it. Rather than being leaders and talking about the real history of white supremacist mob terror, we're expected to act like naive children and choose love while different groups of men have their gun pointed at our face. I am way over time. I'm so sorry about that. But this, I'm sorry, this is a passionate issue when your friend is shot with a munition and these events keep going on. But thank you for listening. I really hope that we address this history of what these are and stop this stuff from happening, because clearly 2 weeks ago was not good. And this is going to continue. And something we need to rupture this pattern. Thank you.
Emery, thank you for both your passion and your perspective. I do want to correct the record, though. Number one, I'm not in allegiance with the alt-right. And I would encourage you to see what they say about me as proof of that. I'm also not in allegiance with the far left, and I would encourage you to see what they say about me as proof of that. 3 weeks ago was an example that I think we will all learn from. And I've asked the police bureau and others to do significant work to provide to me and to the city council a thoughtful, dispassionate analysis of both the planning, the preparation, and the execution of the strategy on August 22nd. That strategy was one I approved. I supported it. I heard the chief out, and ironically, it was based on many of the things that you and others who've testified before today said about police intervention, about escalation, things we've heard from the Department of Justice, about police presence. And I think you will agree that I was absolutely pilloried nationally for bringing the community together 2 days prior to basically put the message out that we want people to seek peaceful resolution to these differences. The day after that, I actually held a press conference on police tactics. And I expressed that it was not going to be about politics, it was going to be about behavior, that we would not tolerate violence, that we would not tolerate criminal destruction. And we've seen this in previous years, and you've seen it. You've seen where the police engage, and that can, in fact, lead to escalation of the situation. We were keenly aware of that. But it's clear the public wants something else. The public doesn't want an overwhelming police presence, nor do they want it, the appearance that the police are not going to get engaged. But I also want to put on the table again, we have to also be concerned about our public employees that we send into these situations where there are mutual combatants wanting to beat the crap out of each other. And if they only have fists or clubs or guns, that is a volatile situation. So we're still trying to find the right recipe here. And I take full responsibility on all of this. Portland is unique in that we do seem to be ground zero for alt-right groups to come into our town because they know they'll get a response, and they do. And we saw that on August 22nd. And it also gave people the opportunity to say that I didn't care about poor people, that I didn't care about people on the east side of the river, even though we had exactly 2 hours of advance confirmation that the Proud Boys were moving their event. And we did make notifications to the school district, to Apano, to other groups. We did our best. But it is clear, based on the public outcry, on the media outcry, on the national front, that that strategy was not the right strategy. I think we can all acknowledge that. I take full responsibility for it. I think we all acknowledge we want to do better. So for me, it's about proper training. It's about clear directives. It's about making sure the community feels safe to express their First Amendment rights to freedom of speech and assembly, but also to hold anybody, and I mean anybody, regardless of their politics, hold anybody accountable who thinks violence or criminal destruction is the right answer. That's not what this is about today. What this is about today is an acknowledgement of a consensus agreement between the city of Portland and this individual who you know. I don't believe I do, so I can't speak personally to this issue, but this is the agreement that they've agreed on, and so I'm going to support it. It's not my place to sit here and judge either party to say they should not have reached this agreement. It was entered into in good faith. It seems like a reasonable compromise, a reasonable solution. And so I intend to support it.
Thank you, Mayor.
I always appreciate your perspective. I know we don't see eye to eye, but I do appreciate that you do come forward and you're very clear in your views. And it gives us this opportunity to at least have this conversation. And I am appreciative of you for that.
I shared the history, and I don't want to get hung up on your particular, I don't think you're in allegiance with them, but when we have protests and people have sniper rifles and things like that, and they're not given a citation, but my friend is hit with a grenade or a 40 millimeter thing, I think it's important for people who just joined the city council to really understand the history of these types of things. I do try to be fair to the history. So when you have people traveling here who have done a lot of crime and a lot of violence here, and they're just And there's a big plan put out beforehand that we're not going to put any police there because they can't use their munitions. I was there when the legislature, you told me to go to the legislature. The police agreed to the legislative restriction. They testified in favor
They actually did not. The letter from the police association was maybe more nuanced than it should have been. I don't speak for them. But they did raise specific concerns. And on the guns, the long gun thing, I want to be really clear on that because people need to know this. And I didn't know this until I got to City Hall, to be honest. They were not breaking the law. They are allowed under, you know, the police went and checked to see if they had the appropriate documentation and permitting required to be able to carry a firearm. Oregon is one of those few states that allows people legally to carry a firearm if they have the right documentation. And those guys did. So the police had no option but to hand them back and say, please put them away. And it's my understanding that did happen, but they even went, I think, beyond what state law allows. I mean, they asked them nicely to put them away and the guys did, but they had no legal requirement to do so. That's my understanding.
I agree that this state has a lot of laws that support right-wing white supremacist mobs intimidating people of color and anti-racist. I totally agree that this state and this city allows a lot of those things. And that's part of what I'm saying. We saw that happen here. We saw where people are allowed to come and say and do and threaten a lot of different things and terrorize a lot of people. And who gets attacked over and over and over? And what's the lesson that people learn? And now we're being told that the police can't intervene. What I'm suggesting is we need to rupture this pattern of white supremacists and right-wing people threatening and executing violence, such as taking over the Capitol, such as threatening legislators of color in Oregon, such et cetera, et cetera. You are deflecting from that. And I believe that our police can be trained about this history and respond differently. So I know we're gonna let you
we're in agreement there that you know, training is a key component. And by the way, a lot of the conversations we're having with the Department of Justice are specifically around training, not only what they're trained, but who does the training, what the involvement of the community is around training. And then one last thing, and I'll shut up, but I'm actually really enjoying our conversation. So I have a theory on the First Amendment. Not everybody agrees, and I want to be really clear, but my theory on the First Amendment is this. The First Amendment guarantees no government infringement upon people's right to assembly and free speech. And I have learned to understand and appreciate that free speech includes really awful, reprehensible speech that I don't like, but it's still protected under the First Amendment. But what is not protected under the First Amendment, here's where my theory comes in. If you say we are going to gather for the purpose of engaging in acts of violence or criminal destruction, I believe we should be able to preemptively prevent people from doing that. And I just want to remind people for the record, because sometimes history gets lost. 3 years ago, almost four now, I tried to pass a time, place, manner ordinance based on the fact that there were groups coming to our city who had made it very clear and public that they intended to engage in acts of violence and intimidation, particularly against people of color. And I sought to block them. And I just want to remind you that the community wouldn't have it. The community strongly disagreed with me. I think something like 120 newspapers nationally accused me of not understanding or appreciating the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. So I just want to remind people, I did make that effort and the community didn't want it. So we've moved on to other strategies. But I've taken enough of your time, enough of my colleagues' time. We should continue this because I do enjoy my conversations with you. And I think it highlights a bunch of important issues. So Emery, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that concludes public testimony as well as my long testimony. Thanks, colleagues, for putting up with that. We have a short agenda today. Is there any further question of our staff, and I'm sorry, I have to bring this thing back up again. I don't see any hands raised. Was there anything else, staff, that you wanted to, Rob, or anybody else that you wanted to raise?
Sure, Mr. Mayor. I think Ms. Cole and Mr. Nam in particular will be happy to hear some developments. As you might already know, and some folks might not, as then Chief Outlaw suspended PPB's use of the aerial distraction device as a result of these incidents on August 4th, 2018. And to my knowledge, in the 3 years that have elapsed, no ADDs have been deployed, and I don't think there's any thoughts by PPB of bringing that back into the PPB's inventory of crowd control munitions. So I think that.
Yeah. Rob, thanks for that. I appreciate it. Colleagues, any further discussion before I call the roll? Seeing none, Keelan, please call the roll.
Hardesty.
I want to take a moment to apologize on behalf of the city for the injury that was done to the individual whose case is being settled today. We spent a lot of time adjudicating issues that worked their way through the process. I know $50,000 will not make this individual whole again. I just wanted to comment, the proposal would have let the police chief decide when and where people could protest. No one would support that. That's why that proposal died. Today, I'm not going to say much because, as people know, we're in the midst of contract talks. We're in the midst of being held accountable by the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. I will add that I am very pleased that our congressional delegation asked the DOJ to investigate the white supremacist interstate travel to create harm and violence against community members. I am very appreciative that our congressional delegation has taken that lead. It is unfortunate that these cases continue to work their way through the city council without changing how police engage and interact with the public. I vote aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Just a clarification. It would have allowed it would have allowed the police chief to keep the groups reasonably separated, but not completely in different parts of the city. Just to clarify that. I'm glad that we were able to reach this agreement. I think it's the right thing to do, and I support it. I vote aye, and the ordinance is adopted. And colleagues, it's always interesting. Thank you all. I look forward to seeing you in person soon. We are adjourned.